with Andrew McLaughlin, who's the managing editor for AWR. How you doing, Andrew?
Good, Rob. How are you?
Yeah, really good, mate. Great to see you here. Well, here we are at the Avalon Air Show. It's the end of day one, and it's been a very, very busy and pretty epic first day. But I just want to tell the story from where we are now. I just want to go backwards. And if people are coming down to the trade days at Avalon Air Show, what is it that they can expect to see at the trade days?
So, as the name suggests, it's professional days. You've got a lot of people in uniform, a lot of people in the industry, not so much the punters yet. They tend to come in later in the week. So a lot of business is done, a lot of networking is done. That's primarily why we're here, of course. And, yeah, it's not too crowded, so you can get a meal when you want to.
Yeah. Like
that. So, yeah, it's good. It's very good.
How many Avalons have you done, mate?
This is my 11th.
That's a lot of Avalon Air shows.
Yeah, I think I missed one in the mid-2000s, but other than that, I've covered them all.
Is it still exciting for you, or is it more of the same?
Look, I'm a spotter at heart, so my neck's always aimed upwards, and that's why we get into this game in the first place. But it is hard work. I've been here in the capacity as a journalist. I've been here in the capacity of a communications consultant and also representing industry. So I've been here with several hats on, and yeah, it never gets old, but I get older.
I love it. That's real eloquently put, very nicely said. Well, for the people that are listening that don't know you or don't know ADBR, just tell us a little bit about yourself and a bit about ADBR.
So I've been a defence journo on and off since 1998. In 2011, I got a job working for what is now CASG, then DMO, in the JSF project office. After that, I went out and set up my own consultancy. And then for 2 years, I was the Australian Communications Representative for Northrop Grumman Australia. That finished up in mid-17, and I was warmly welcomed back to the magazine fold in late 17, and then given the helm of ADBR in early 2018, and a year later, I think we've rebuilt the magazine. It was struggling for a while there, mainly to capacity issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the new owners have very kindly invested in the magazine and given me, I guess, enough rope to not hang myself. And I think the magazine's in a great place now.
Yeah, fantastic. What's your favourite thing to report on in defence? From F-35, you're not allowed to say that.
Yeah, aviation is my first love, obviously.
Yeah.
But so I find I'm on a steep learning curve with the maritime and the land part of a lot of the programs. Very fortunate to have Max Blenken working for us, who really gets the land side of things. And between us, I think we can get our heads around most of the Navy stuff. We've got a great relationship with CASG and with the services. They can walk us through those areas we need to be walked through so we get a better understanding. So I think we're getting there, yeah. But yeah, obviously aviation is my first love, and I think the magazine, the last couple of issues, has shown that.
Yeah.
But we'll be concentrating more on the naval side of things coming up to PAC with Pacific in the next 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll see a greater emphasis on that.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, you said you did 11 Avalon air shows. That's a lot of air shows. And, you know, technology and our society has changed radically in a decade, right? How have you seen it different at Avalon here from 10 years ago?
Well,
or 20 years ago.
If you look at this show and the last show in particular, the integrated, what they call the Jericho display, where you have 15, 20 aircraft in the air at the same time, from C-17s to PC-21s and everything in between, all the fast jets, P-8, wedge-tail, helicopters, and the way that, you know, it's obviously a very scripted show, but it shows just the change of the platforms. Just about every platform has been swapped out in the last decade. Mm-hmm. 20 years, the only thing that's left from 20 years ago is the C-130J.
Yeah.
And that's undergoing a big upgrade at the moment, so that's being refreshed. And actually, it's not even 20 years ago, it's 19 years ago, the C-130J. So I don't think there's anything except PC-9, which will be gone by the end of the year.
I can remember coming to Avalon Air Show, I can't remember, I think maybe two or three ago, and for the first time seeing a Global Hawk. And just thinking, oh my God, you know, like this drone has a wingspan of a 737, and just thinking, just been blown away by it. And I think at the time it was the longest flight that it had ever undertaken from the US to, I think it was Adelaide at the time.
Yeah, that was 2001. One of the early development Global Hawks flew Edwards Air Force Base to Edinburgh non-stop across the Pacific. And then for Avalon, I think 4 years ago, Northrop Grumman brought out a Global Hawk, which landed in the middle of the night, unfortunately, but it was on display. And Northrop Grumman has also brought out the full-scale model of the Triton, which is the naval version which the Air Force is buying. It's only a plastic model, but it's the same size as the real one, and it its scale is amazing. It looks like a massive glider.
And that's the thing that I saw out on the flight line with Australian roundels on it, right?
Yeah, it's on the Jericho Trail, so it has Australian markings on it, and it's very representative of what the real thing will look like. It's 1-to-1 scale, it's very accurate, and it comes apart and lives in a container.
Yeah. And what about all the other drone stuff that's happening? That must be like a real revolution for someone like you who's been reporting on defence for such a long time, and really it's only in the last sort of 8 to 10 years, really, that's come to bear here for the ADF, right?
It has, and Army in particular has probably been leading that way. But they were probably first to the party out of the three services with drones operating some of the handheld things in Afghanistan, and then the Shadow and the Scan Eagle, things like that. And Lieutenant Colonel Kieran Joyce in the last couple of years has been what they call trying to get Army drone literate. And from everything from the little racing drones, which fit in the palm of your hand, up to the DJI Falcons and things like that, Phantoms, and just trying to get everybody used to seeing drones around and using them.
Mm.
And that will translate, obviously, to the bigger ones that are effective, you know, whether they've got an ISR kit or something that goes bang on them.
Yeah, fantastic. And tell us a little bit about your role here at Avalon Airshow. What are you going to be covering over the next couple of days?
So I'm wearing two hats. We're here with the Australian Aviation team working on the Show Daily magazine. We'll be covering the four trade days. The first one came out this morning, nearly 40 pages, which is bigger than anything we've ever done before. I think the biggest we've done before, that was 28. Yeah. So great to have the support from our advertisers to allow us to do that, which is, you know, fantastic. The other hat I'm wearing, obviously, is as an editor of ADVR. Basically networking and getting stories for our next issue. So,
cool. What have you covered today? What did you cover today?
Today's been a fairly F-35 heavy day. I had a briefing this morning with Lockheed Martin on the sustainment of F-35, and that was very good, with the CEO of Lockheed Martin Australia, Vince DiPietro, which is fantastic. And then this afternoon, the Air Force, Lee Gordon, the Air Vice Marshal in charge of the program, and Mike Kitcher, the one star in charge of Air Combat Group, both gave a brief on how the F-35 is going since they arrived in December. Everything looks very positive. There are lots of caveats on that, obviously. There's a long way to go, but it was oversubscribed, the press conference, so there was no standing room only, so it was a lot of people in there. Not many questions asked, so that probably goes to the quality of the initial brief, which was fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic.
And good to see my old boss from the new Air Combat Capability Office days, Air Vice Marshal Kim Osley, who's here as a reservist looking after the IP delegation. So he managed to stick his head in there, which was great too.
So you've been part of that F-35 program for a long time now, right? And was it since the beginning or was it just after?
No, I worked in there 2011, 2012, only for about 6 months. So I didn't have a lot, it was on a contract, so I didn't have a long time in there. But I feel like I've been fighting the battle for years because on social media there was... It's always been a for or against. You never sit on the fence with the program. And I think I know enough people in Air Force to know that they haven't been drinking the Kool-Aid as they've been accused of doing.
Mm.
And I think that it's now starting to bear fruit. It's been pain on the way, there's no doubt, programmatics. But I think the capability is really amazing.
And what do you think when you see the thing tearing a hole in the sky out the front here?
That was very cool because 2 years ago, they just did basically a few missed approaches, nothing too sporty. Today, you know, I managed to catch the back end of the display, and they weren't holding a lot back. And this isn't a full-time display pilot, should be noted. This is a line pilot who's doing the validation, the verification testing. So he isn't a fully worked-up, full-time display pilot like other services have got. He's just doing this on the side, and it was pretty impressive.
What do you think about the sound of that thing? It's very distinctive. It's like nothing else, right?
The pitch is something new. It's got quite a distinctive whine as he throttles up, and that pitch as it comes past you, it gets you right in the throat. So, you know, if you thought the Hawk or the Super Hornet was loud, you ain't seen nothing yet.
It's something pretty special, right? I think it puts a smile on a lot of people's faces. And I've seen it a couple of times in the last few days, and I was watching it this morning, and I looked at the people in the crowd as the thing flew past, because I'd looked at it already, and their faces were like, oh my God, high eyebrows, wide mouths, and people were like, oh my God, that's so much louder than everything else out there, right? It makes it fun for an air show.
It does, and I think I caught myself with a stupid grin on my face a couple of times too.
That's okay. You've been forgiven.
Watching that stab turn on the missed approach was amazing.
They dig right in there, don't they? And the thing just keeps accelerating, doesn't it, when he pulls it around the corner like
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fantastic. All right, if people want to connect with you, Andrew, what's the best way that they can do that?
So we have a website which has been refreshed in the last few months, advr.com.au. or you can email me at andrew@felix.net.au. That's felix.net.au.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure that those links are included in the show notes for us. And if anyone wants to connect with you, they can reach out. Thanks for coming on the show and spending a few minutes with us, mate. And we look forward to speaking with you soon, mate. Bye for now.
Pleasure, mate.
I'm here with Mark Jessop, who is the official Australian aviation photographer. Mark, welcome to the podcast. How you doing, mate?
Good morning. How are we?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. It's day one of Avalon Air Show, and I talked to a guy who gets a bit of a lead into the air show, which is kind of cool. You've been lucky enough to be flying around before this thing even kicks off. What number Avalon is this for you?
For me, I was here for the first in 92, then there was a big gap. And now I've done, this will be the third in a row, so four total.
And tell me, mate, does it still get you excited? You've seen it all before. It's all a little bit different every time you do it, but is it still exciting for you?
It is. Look, it doesn't get any bigger than this. It is the biggest air show in Australia. Everything's here. Jets are here. Planes are here. All my mates are here. It's great. We can't wait to kick it off.
What's your favourite thing?
I have to be honest, I'm just going to go straight out with jets. I love noise, I love speed, and I just love seeing the sky ripped up.
What's the favourite? Is it a Hornet or is it something else?
I have to be honest again, I will say the classic Hornet. It's its last display here, so it's going to retire in the next 2 years. Yeah, it's been around the country for over 30 years. Everyone loves it, but it's going to disappear soon. We've got the new girl coming in, which is the F-35, and it's its first public display down here. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, excellent. Well, you've been so lucky. I have to say I'm so envious working in and around this business, and I saw you out flying with a Pilatus PC-21, which is, of course, the replacement to the PC-9, and it's a changing of the guard, and that's all happening real time. And you actually got yourself in the backseat of one of those things, and we're out taking photos. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, I've been working with the Royal Australian Air Force Roulettes for over 6 years now, and helping them out with photos and just, you know, promoting aviation, getting kids involved. And through that, they invited me down to be the official photographer for the Aladdin's Magic Carpet Ride, where they took off from Sale and went over the local townships before flying over the CBD of Melbourne, over Point Cook, and then they opened the media launch here last Friday.
Well, it was a really unique demonstration and a really unique formation, wasn't it? Because it was the PC-9s in four PC-21s and then you in the photo ship.
Yeah, that's correct. Look, they got up as many PC-9s that they could, and we had the new PC-21 just in the back holding form, but to see the formation go over, it was very impressive.
Now, tell us, what's it like to go into life support, to strap on that G-suit, to put all the cool gear on and do all the cool pilot stuff? Take the listeners through what that actually feels like.
Everyone who's been in aviation, you don't get to do what the military pilots do, and to go through life support, get the fitting, get the G-suit on, get the ejection seat experience of just trying to understand if there's emergency, what you have to do, and you've got to do it quickly. But when you're working with the best, it's quite easy, yeah, but when it actually gets to the moment that you're stepping to the aircraft, that's when it becomes reality of this is really the best thing that can ever happen.
Is there some butterflies? Because I saw a picture of you. You took a little selfie of yourself with a cool Raffi helmet in there, and I had some butterflies there for you, but it was more excitement than it was trepidation. How do you feel about that?
No matter how much planning you put into it and you think about it, the moment you actually strap in, it's reality. And there are butterflies. The whole flight, even though we're up for over an hour and a half, it went very quick. Mm-hmm. But the moment you step to the plane, it's real. And, you know, it's the moment that every person like myself dreams for, the opportunity to go up on a live bang suit with the military.
Well, you've been lucky enough to go in a PC-9 as well. Could you tell the difference when you were in the 21?
Yeah, definitely. 2 years ago, the Roulettes again invited me up to photograph a display up in Townsville. That was spectacular. Look, at the time, the PC-9... haven't been in one before, it was awesome. But going in the PC-21, look, that is just a massive step up. Any of the new people that are coming through in the military and want to be an aviator, going from a PC-21 into any other aircraft, you're ahead of the game. PC-9 is 30-year-old technology. PC-21 is, you know, the cutting edge, and it is a slippery rocket. It's so fast, it's so smooth. Like, I want one.
And tell me, I saw a photo where everybody was lined up, ready to depart. So you guys in the photo shoot left first. And did you circle around the aerodrome and take some photos and do that? Well, that must have been pretty cool to watch them all take off.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we looked at in the brief of what we considered historic shots. So we went over the history of the PC-9 and even previous aircraft like the Mackie. And there were certain shots that we wanted. One of the shots was all the aircraft lined up at RAF Base Point East Sail. And yeah, so we took off first. We had a pretty good open run of what we wanted to do. So we, because of the speed difference, the PC-9 was around about 210 knots. We had the ability to go to 300. So we could move around and position ourselves through the whole flight in any position that we wanted to very quickly, very easily and very smoothly.
So you're in the back seat, you launch, everybody's in the sky. What's the first formation you guys are into?
Pretty sure it was just the wedge. We mainly stuck to the one formation just because there was 9 PC-9s and 4 PC-21s. It's a very technical formation and, you know, you've always got to have emergency plans. And just due to the amount of aircraft, we didn't want to make it too technical, so we kept it very basic and kept to that. Obviously, we don't fly very tight formation the whole flight just due to it's not easy. But coming up over the key points like the Towns and the CBD, Point Cook, you know, that's when they all go tight again. So it's an experience that's just really hard to put into words, but it was awesome.
When you're boxed in and you're all close together like that, what happens if somebody in the guts of the formation has a problem? Do they just pull up or do they push forward? And is that the exit? How do they get out?
Depending on where we're at, which equals obviously if they do have to pull out of the formation, if we're in a turn or if we're flying level, yeah, the pilot will make the decision of whether they're going to pull up or if they're actually going to push down and get away from the formation. But they're really the only two options. But it's really a spread. When the aircraft that is in it has an issue, the whole formation will spread. So then that person's got plenty of room to make the decision.
That's really cool. And one of the things that kind of struck me when I was looking at your photos and I was trying to put myself in the seat because I'm so jealous of what you got to experience was... You get in the aircraft and off you go and you have this incredible experience with the Air Force and you do all that, but then you actually got to get your camera out and take some photos. How is that experience? There's a lot going on in your mind and you've got to really put all of that experience aside and concentrate on what it is you're actually going to be doing, which is taking photos, right?
That's right. I was there to do a job. So it wasn't just a joyride.
Such a jolly, right?
Yeah, I know. It wasn't just a joyride for me.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of planning when... went into it, you know, I was looking at Google Earth, I used that, we already had the flight plan, so using that, I just looked at what elevation we need to be at so you can get the right angle looking back at the formation. So visually in my head, I'd already flown the flight a couple of times, you know, obviously on the day things can change, you know, it depends on conditions, depends on what block, where the clouds are, but in my head I was visually ready for it, but again, as soon as you get up there, you know, it is a lot to take in, and it is overwhelming, but you are there to do a job. In the hour and a half, probably took about 2,000 photos, which is good, but I did have a couple of moments just to take in the moment and appreciate the hard work that's paid off.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little reward there for all the work that you do here with Australian Aviation. And for the people listening that might not know, Mark is actually the number one aviation photographer in Australia. You won the award last year, so congratulations on that. I haven't had a chance to say that publicly to you. We've said it many times privately, but congratulations on winning that award.
Yeah, look, that was a massive honour. The people that have gone before me are people I've looked up to, you know, the whole time I've been taking the photos. And even with the magazine, it's something that I had as a kid, and all the photos, they were the photos that I dreamt about doing, and now I've actually got the opportunity. So to get that honour, it was more, really, I looked at it for my family and for all my friends who have put me in a position to give me the opportunity to make that happen.
Yeah, that's fantastic, mate, and really well said. And in the latest edition of Australian Aviation, that's the March edition as you're listening to this podcast, there's actually a poster of a roulette, which is a PC-9, and that's your photo in there. And I love that we got a poster inside that magazine because I used to pull those things out and stick them on a wall when I was a kid as well. So hopefully for the folks listening, they'll do the same thing. But let's just come back into that roulette flight and that PC-21 flight for a couple more minutes because I've got so many questions because I love talking about it.
Yep.
The next one I've got for you is how do you move around the formation there? Obviously, you're conning the aircraft and telling the skipper of the machine where to go, but how are you conning them? What are your voice commands if you need to move up, back, up, down, left, right? How are you saying that to them?
Yeah, look, I was very fortunate that the pilot I had, he's got close to 5,000 hours on PC-9s. total flying hours is way over 10,000. So to have a pilot like that, we had it again. We had a brief via email for at least 2 weeks before, just trying to let him understand what I'm trying to achieve. I send him photos, just trying to give him an idea on an angle. But once we're in the aircraft, they're very basic commands. It's just push, push forward, pull back, left and right, up and down. Due to the speed difference in the aircraft, we can make that happen very easy, very quickly, and again, very smoothly. So my pilot, JT, he was just a champion at it. And look, there was never any issues. He put me where I needed to be every time. The good thing was we were chasing light. It was patchy clouds, so there was sort of like light beams where once the aircraft got lit up by the light, I could push up or go higher or push left just to get that angle. And it's quite surprising why you're up there, because I'm not looking forward at the aircraft. I'm totally focused on the formation, so I don't have much of an idea of where the horizon is. So I'm actually moving a lot in the aircraft, and hopefully in a day or two you'll see a video which will show in 360 how I made that happen, which gives you an idea of just I'm not looking at where I'm going. I'm just totally focused on the subject, which is the formation.
And what do you feel? Sometimes when I haven't been flying for a little while and I'm out there pulling a little bit of G, I do feel a bit airsick, but you're looking down the lens of a camera taking photos and this guy is pulling on the aircraft, pulling a little bit of G. Did you feel a bit crook or were you okay?
Look, I've been doing it for a while now. I've probably got about 2 to 3 hours in the air doing air-to-air. But again, because I don't do it every day like the military pilots do or any pilot, it's always a change, you know. Anyone who's pulling 2 Gs while you're trying to hold a 3-kilo camera, that camera becomes, you know, 6 kilos while you're in a turn and you're looking down a very narrow field of vision, which for the sensors can be hard to deal with. Touch wood, I technically haven't had to use the sick bag, but I will admit I have grabbed the sick bag a couple of times and somehow it didn't happen.
Well, it's bananas, right? That's the adage. Tastes the same going in as they do coming back out. So that's what you do on an aero flight.
That's it. But no, look, the experience of flying around, pulling some Gs and, you know, just doing stuff that's not normal, it's sensational. Like any kid who loves aviation, seriously, go have a go at aerobatics or get into the military because they do stuff that no one else does.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And tell me about flying around Melbourne in a large formation like that. Man, that's something that people just don't get to do, and it's not certainly not something that we get to see very often as well. What was that experience like flying over the MCG and the CBD and that type of thing?
Well, the key thing is with Melbourne, everyone in Australia knows the MCG, so it was an iconic photo that we were after. We did get the photo, which is really good. Again, it goes very quickly, so in your head, you're trying to visualise, you're trying to get the photo, but at the same time, when you look down and got the roulettes there, you know, there's over 10 aircraft in the air and you're looking down over the Melbourne CBD, MCG and the Tennis Centre, yeah, it's awesome.
Fantastic. And tell us about coming back to sail and all of those aircraft arriving in the circuit all at once. Were you guys in first or did you photograph those arrivals?
Nah, because we took off first and we were using a lot more acceleration with the boys in the rest of the formation. You know, they were very consistent. Their airspeed can only go to X. We were moving around the whole formation. So, you know, we had plenty of fuel left, but we wanted to come in first. And there was a couple of photos that we wanted as they taxi us, but I will say as we came in, we went as fast as we did the whole flight, and then at the end on the brake turn, we pulled 4.5G, and yeah, I certainly know what 4.5G feels like. It put me in my seat.
And when the rubber meets the pavement again and you're back on the ground, tell me, was it a magic carpet ride?
It was. Like I said, the PC-21 is just so smooth. It's the fastest, smallest aircraft I've ever been in. It is just agile. It's a rocket. It's just everything that anyone who had wanted to fly a plane, if you got a ride in one, seriously, you're coming out smiling.
That's fantastic. And what's happening with the roulettes here at Avalon Airshow? Do you know what the program is? Are they forming up as a group of PC-21s or is it PC-9 still?
Look, there's a lot of rumours out there, but they're going to be doing their last final displays here over the coming days, and on Sunday will be their final public display. There will be 4 PC-21s, which is in the mix, but they're obviously not up to the full teamwork, so they'll come in and just show you a bit of the difference. But for the roulettes, look, they've been going now for over 30 years with the PC-9. You know, it is the final days of it, so it's better if everyone just comes here and checks it out. And if you can't, I'm sure you'll be able to see our photos and video.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, I want to move on from Pilatus and from the PC-21, and I want to talk about another flight that you were lucky enough to go and do. My gosh, you talk about the perks of the job. You were lucky enough to head out with Airbus corporate helicopters in which machine? Tell us which one it was.
I'm pretty sure it's the ACH-135. Now, it's their new corporate helicopter. Is one beautiful little chopper. Look, if you haven't been in a top-end helicopter, this thing is beautiful. So we got picked up in Melbourne CBD. To take off from a chopper out of the city is full on, and to go up the Yarra River, we ended up in the Yarra Valley, and on the way we did some photos, which was, it's just spectacular having that opportunity again. Hard work does pay off. Yeah, coming back, look, the chopper is just beautiful. Airbus have got a great little package there, and I'm sure it's going to be a great seller.
Absolutely, and you were not in that aircraft. You're obviously in another ship. What machine were you in?
Pretty sure it was the 130, which is another Airbus chopper, and we're using that as the photo ship because obviously that's not the new one. We need to photograph the new one, but it was, again, another beautiful aircraft.
And tell me about the differences between doing an air-to-air photo shoot as a photographer from a helicopter versus, a high-speed, slippery little rocket.
Well, the good thing is, instead of flying at 300 knots, we're only taking photos at 60 knots, so there's a fair bit of difference.
Did you notice that difference? Because there's only a couple of days between the both of them, right? It must have felt slow time.
Yeah, you do, but again, when you're looking out of the aircraft or out of a helicopter, you are focused on the target, so you're looking down a very narrow field, so there's still motion, 60 knots, you're still doing over 100 k's in the air with the door off. So with the door off, obviously you're getting the buffer from the wind and from the rotor wash, which is coming down here. So again, different experience, but very similar. My job is to get the image, so I'm really focused on capturing the target.
And for the more technical people out there and the folks that are interested in photography, tell us a little bit about your hardware. What gear do you actually use?
Look, I've been a very little Nikon photographer now pretty much my whole life. So at the moment I'm using pretty much their top-of-the-line full-frame camera, which is the D850. And over the course of the show I use different lenses. So I use a wide-angle, which is a 24-120, which is a very good lens for doing air-to-air photography because I can go wide, but I can zoom in. But the lens isn't actually a long lens. The other lens I use, 70-200, which is for your closest stuff with crowds in the flight line, and then for anything in the air I pretty much use the 200 to 500, and hopefully I'll get to use the 800 mil from Nikon while I'm here too, which is my favorite lens because I can shoot over 2 to 3 k's with it.
Wow, that's one of those really, really long lenses, right? Is that thing heavy to lug around all day?
It is heavy, and I wish I had, a Cairo with me, because it does get heavy. The lens is around about, I think it's just under 4 kilos, and the body's about 2.5 kilos. But the problem is that you've got to hold it with your arm out, so it's like holding this big bazooka. And over the course of the day, look, your shoulder and neck do get sore. But hey, when you've got the biggest lens that they make and you can shoot that distance, I'll do anything to make it happen.
Do you have a favorite setting? Do you have a favorite lens you like to work with, something that's universal, or is it just horses for courses? Is it just the tool you need at the time?
Yeah, everything's different. Like, you're chasing different things. Once they're in the air, obviously, I want to fill the frame. I want to get as close as I can. So the photos that you see in the magazine, you've got good quality, good detail, and, you need that clarity with it, and that's why you have these long lenses. They cost a lot, but they give you the sharpness that you need.
Fantastic. And is there a reason why you picked that particular Nikon body? Because there's just so many choices out there for photographers, and when you come to an air show like Avalon, there is literally thousands of people with all sorts of incredible equipment. What's the reason that you picked that actual body?
Look, I chose that body because I'm in a position to maximise the opportunity with it. It's not a cheap body, but it's a top-end professional body. But over the period of time I've been taking photos, I started off with a very basic camera setup, and I've just slowly been building up my collection of good cameras to the point I'm in now that, I'm in the top end.
And tell me, what is the favourite thing that you like to photograph air-to-air? Is it from a helicopter ship? Is that more fun than a fixed-wing one? Because I've seen you do some warbird stuff as well, and what do you like to do the most?
Look, anything in the air is a privilege. The dream to take photos of jets in the air has happened out of the KC-30, the RAF tanker. any opportunity, look, every experience is different and everything is just awesome. So it's not like there's one thing which I want to do, because if you set that goal of just one, you know, what happens after you've done it? It's more I just look for any opportunity that comes along and, you know, make the most of that. And at the end of the day, it's just fun doing whatever's put in front of you.
Yeah, fantastic. And what would you say to people that are listening that were interested in getting into aviation photography and doing some more of that? What words of encouragement would you give them?
Look, practice, practice, practice. You've got to take photos. I take on average 90,000 frames a year, and I've been doing that most of my life while I've had digital. But I learn on film, so I also learn in a period where you had to pay for it. The thing now with digital is on the back of the camera, you can see how you're going, which means that you can adjust, you can learn. There's lots of information on the internet. There's lots of learning videos on YouTube. And there's good community on, you know, all the social media platforms where you can, you know, talk to people. There's enough aviation groups out there where you can get help. But just go to your local airport. Go where there's planes and learn. Take photos. Learn the light. Learn the aircraft. But most importantly, learn your camera.
Fantastic. And Mark, if people want to connect with you and reach out to you and ask about photos and see your stuff, where's the best place that they can do that?
Look, you can definitely contact us through Facebook on Australian Aviation. I have an Instagram account, which is Mark J Photo. They're probably the easiest ones. But again, you know, you will see my work out there and you'll see it in the magazine. So, look, I'm more than happy to help anyone. You know, a lot of people helped me to be in this position, so you've got to give it back.
Well, before I let you go, tell me about what's coming up at Avalon Air Show for you. Are you going flying again? Surely not.
I think there's a rumour I might be going flying in one or two things. But, look, I've had times where I thought I was going flying and it didn't happen. So until I'm literally locked in or strapped in and the wheels are up and I'm actually off the ground, you know, nothing's definite. But either way, jets are here, loud noises here, and it's going to be a cracker week.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast and sharing your experience of that magic carpet ride and sharing your experience with Airbus Corporate Helicopters and telling us all about that Nikon equipment as well. Thanks, Mark. Enjoy the rest of the air show, mate, and we'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Easy, Rob.
Well, I'm here with Leah Vesic, who's a regular contributor to the Australian Aviation Podcast, and here we are at Avalon Air Show. Good day, Leah. How are you going?
Hi, great. I mean, can you be anything other than great when you're here at Avalon Air Shows?
It's our thing for the aeroplane nerds that we are, right? That here we are.
Really is. I think everyone here is geeking out. There's just something for everyone.
Absolutely. Well, you wear many, many different hats, and I just want to share that with the audience here as we kick it off, and then we can talk about Avalon specifically and what's happening. But you're here representing Women in Aviation International, RAOS, and the Royal Aeronautical Society. So it's going to be a busy week for you. Have you had a couple of minutes to even have a look around and look at some of the military displays yet?
You know, I actually have. I've had an opportunity to go around, especially a lot of the exhibitor booths and the halls. The benefit of being so involved in the industry is that you see so many people that you know, and it's just a great opportunity to connect and network with old friends and new. So definitely it is a priority for me when I come to these events. It's oftentimes the only time I see a lot of people in the industry. It is such a big event and everyone does fly in from really around the world as well. I have a lot of international friends who fly in and we get to catch up.
Fantastic. And give us some context for the Avalon Air Show. What is it? This is like the biggest thing in aviation here in Australia. What is it that's so big for you?
Well, apart from being the social highlight of my calendar, which is probably really sad to say, but it's just such a great opportunity to, one, network and meet with new people and old, as I mentioned. It's a great opportunity to see what's new in the industry, what's innovative, what's progressing, whether it be military or in the general aviation space or just in the advocacy space as well. So across the whole aviation aerospace industry, you've got so much going on, and oftentimes we kind of fall into our own little sectors that we forget that we all need to talk to one another and really group together to progress collectively.
And what have you seen change over the years, and particularly in the last 2 years since the last Avalon Air Show? What's new?
More women. I can honestly say I see a lot more women in leadership roles, a lot more women representing lots of different organisations, lots of different sectors of the industry, and that's a really positive thing. And second to that, there's lots of young people that come through. And as with any industry, if you don't have the next generation ready to take the reins and move it forward, then you simply stagnate and, you know, you become irrelevant. So we work in such an incredible industry that you need that fresh blood coming through. When you see the young people, the young aerospace professionals, you know that we're leaving it in safe hands.
Well, that's fantastic and really well said. On the front half of the week here, here we are on Tuesday, which is the very first trade day. It's the opening day. Who are you representing? What do you got? Three things that you're working on here. Which one are you representing first up?
Yeah, so today we're I've got my RA Oz hat and my Women in Aviation hat on. So Women in Aviation International Australian Chapter has a booth in Hall 3, so you can come along and meet all the volunteers and some of the committee members. So I pop in and out there. You can learn about our scholarship programs, our networking and events and engagement. And then if you head over a couple of kilometres over the military side to the general and sport aviation sector, we've got a huge booth for RA Oz. We've got heaps of STEM activities, merchandise to purchase, and just general information, meeting the team as well, learning what RAILS is about and what amazing opportunities are out there in the general and sport aviation sector.
Well, let me unpick one of those things one at a time there. So you talked about Women in Aviation International. How is Avalon Air Show the biggest thing for you guys here? Because there's just so many people. How does it help you guys?
We get to network with a lot of people, a lot of the corporates who have heard of us but maybe don't know or don't see a face to the company and the organisation. We get to mingle with our members, a lot of our Victorian-based members. Obviously, we're a national organisation, but the committee's quite small and spread across the country. So these types of events are those that we get to mingle and actually meet with our membership that we are working so hard for. So a few touch points there. It's good to just get the message out there as well. And I often spruik, and you'll hear me say constantly, you can't be what you can't see. And a lot of times just having a lot of women in these leadership roles, walking around, being seen, and people stopping and asking, you know, what is Women in Aviation? What is it that you actually do? These are all really good questions because they're thought-provoking and we can then spread the message.
Well, what is it that people, what you guys actually do, if people listening have never heard of it before, how do you help? Because it's not just about pilots and people at the pointy end of aeroplanes. Is way more than that, right?
That's right. So we're really lucky because we kind of cover the whole industry. So as you said, not just pilots and engineers, but air traffic controllers, maintainers, students, academics, airline and airport managers and operators, logistics, you name it, we represent. So we are a membership organisation. We offer mentoring and scholarship opportunities. We partner with corporates to get work experience and internship opportunities. And we're there as an advocacy body. And we're there to really sell the message that it is a cool industry. And why would you want to do anything else but work in aviation or aerospace?
Well, that's a very good point. I have to echo that from this side of the microphone as well. That's kind of cool. So tell me about RA Oz and what's your role at RA Oz and what's happening for you guys here at the biggest event in on the calendar for us here in aviation.
Definitely. So I guess my day job is with Recreational Aviation Australia, and we're headquartered in Canberra. And I'm very fortunate to lead the innovation and improvement portfolio. And we've got a team of about three that look after working on the business rather than in the business so much. So people familiar with RALs would know, or maybe don't, that we're a really small team. There's only 13 of us. We've got our operations team, our tech team, and our safety team. Our innovation and improvement team kind of sits above all that and looks from a helicopter view of how the business is going, what we can give back and improve in terms of value benefits for our members. So I really get involved in a bit of everything, which is really fun for me. I get to network and engage with corporates. I get to get out into the field and talk to members and help members, and then just progress the industry as a whole, because without every single sector, we don't have a collective industry. So you need your sport aviation, you need your general, you need your charter, you need your airlines, and you need your defence and space sector. So collectively, when we work together, just imagine what we can achieve, and Avalon is a reflection of that, what we can achieve when we're all together.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautifully said. And you mentioned before about some STEM activities for kids. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so predominantly on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday when we get the public in. We've got Women in Aviation have really cool VR simulators and the VR goggles that you can head over and have a chat to some real pilots and engineers and learn all about those fields. You can then pop over to Royal Aeronautical Society, who are running their National Cool Aeronautics Program, and that's all about the aerospace and space sector. And then if you head down to RAOs, we've got a massive tent that has a really cool hands-on activity where you can make your own wooden wing ribs and just get involved with some gliders and making some aeroplanes and just learning more about what it is that aviation and aerospace can offer you.
Who's it targeted at? How old are the kids?
We target to absolutely everyone,
right,
because aviation needs everyone to get involved.
Yep.
So obviously there's a big push in STEM to get the young ones involved and spark that interest. But as I said, we, through Women in Aviation, we have a lot of career changes that come through. With RALs, we have a lot of semi-retired people who come through. So it's an industry that really appeals and caters to everyone of all ages, all demographics, and we're entirely diverse. And that is why we achieve what we can achieve, because we are so successfully diverse.
You sound like you love what you do.
Oh, maybe just a little.
What's your favourite part? Is it the people?
You know what? I have to say it's the people that I meet.
Because, always is.
Yeah, it really is. It's that energy that every person gets from the industry, whatever it is that they personally have. And then you come to an event like this and everyone's, you know, they've got that buzz, they're on that high, they're doing what they love, and you're just around people who are happy and they want to see a difference in the industry, whether it's from technological side of things, whether it's from a diversity side, the next generation. You've got people who are passionate and they have a purpose of making a difference in the world. And what else would you want to be doing?
Yeah, exactly right. Well, people listening may not have heard of you or have heard you on a podcast before. Just give them a little bit of background, because you've got a really interesting background in the aviation space as a commercial pilot and then in the sales space and a couple of other things. Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, sure. So I pretty much have the love story like most people. I was on a Virgin Blue flight, if that ages me a little bit. And I remember just that feeling, that indescribable feeling of wanting to be in an aeroplane, to be around airports from a very young age. And I turned to my mother at the time and I said, you know, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be. And so she really encouraged me that, you know, at the time I didn't have any female influences who were pilots or in the industry. So she encouraged me to follow that path. And I went to uni, I studied aviation management, and I got that under my belt. And then I thought, no, this pilot thing, I want to give this flying thing a real good crack. So ended up getting my commercial and my multi-engine license just as the airline stopped hiring. So that bubble was burst very quickly. But as you do, I think people in aviation are quite tenacious and you find a way. And my way was selling private jets. So I was quite fortunate to then move overseas to London and Hong Kong and experience the corporate and the business aviation side. But what brought me back to Australia really was the grassroots, general bug-smashing aviation and just meeting the locals and making it, you know, a global difference on a local scale. So, yeah, it's been quite a varied, varied career, but I'm loving it.
And tell me, are you current at the moment? You've been out flying recently?
I'm current, definitely current. Probably my last flight would have had to be a few months ago. So if anyone there needs a co-pilot, please find me at the RAO stand. I'll happily come up for a flight. I am missing it.
And I noticed in the last couple of months you've done some really cool flying, right? I even saw you in a P-51.
Yes,
Tell us about that.
An incredible opportunity to fly in a Mustang. And I think it's an industry where you get afforded some wild opportunities that you never thought is possible. And a lot of it has to do with just immersing yourself and really learning from the experienced people who already are in the industry and using it as an opportunity to grow yourself. So with that, yeah, I've had some crazy opportunities flying some really cool aeroplanes, and I couldn't pick which one is my favourite. Often I get asked that. But anything that flies is just really cool.
The one you're flying, that's the favourite one.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what about the Mustang? What was that like? Was that like an old-fashioned muscle car? What was that like?
Oh, it really was. In all honesty, I remember the fumes. Probably that was the most interesting thing. That
you don't get that in the modern
plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite intense, but it's just the power and, you know, the thrust that that machine has when you take off.
Mm-hmm.
The aerobatics, it's just amazing. It's one of my favourite things about aviation, aerobatic flying. And a lot of it is the fact that it is so graceful, yet it can be so jarring at the same time. So it's such a highly manoeuvrable aircraft, and you can see why it's left such a legacy in the industry.
Absolutely. Well, you've had a flight in an L-39 Albatross as well, right?
Yes, I have.
Do those two things stack up? Do they match up, or are they just apples and oranges completely different?
Well, that's the thing. Every aircraft has their own little niche, and there's things that I love and loathe about each aircraft. But I think the L-39, being the trainer that it was, it's a lot more nimble. It's just got a different personality, if you can say that. I don't think I've ever actually put, you know, a personality to an aircraft, but they're just different, and I love it. Whatever it is, as long as it flies.
I've got some interesting experiences coming up for myself. I'm going to go and do a trial instructional flight in a gyro coming up soon.
Awesome.
So that's, you kind of look at those things on the ground, and you're like, how does that thing get in the sky? What is that? You know, I don't know that much about rotary aviation, but I'm about to find out.
Yeah, and that's the thing, exposing yourself to all the various sectors. There's so much that happens in parachute land, in glider land, in the RAL's land, and then you've got your jets and your fast aircraft too, but you'll find that you'll love it.
Yeah, I'm doing a glider flight as well, so I keep running into these people that do these things that I've always seen and heard about, but I've never had any experience with. So I'm really looking forward to getting at the controls of those two machines and seeing actually what plays out and what happens. I keep your fingers crossed for me, right?
Definitely. Well, you've been a breath of fresh air to this industry as well. So any opportunities you can seize, I'd say from one aviator to the next, use them up as much as you can.
Awesome. Thanks, mate. Well, tell me about the back half of the week with the Royal Aeronautical Society. Tell us what that's all about.
Yeah, so again, another advocacy group. The Royal Aeronautical Society has branches around Australia, and they're representing on the Australian divisional level here. They run a national STEM program called Cool Aeronautics. People more commonly know a Royal Aeronautical Society for the fellowships and the esteemed individuals in the engineering and aviation space. But really now we're looking to the future and the next generation, and running a program where we enthuse the next generation to look up to the skies and to consider the industry as a career option.
Oh, fantastic. And what's your role going to be in the next couple of days? Are you manning the stand, getting the word out there? How are you doing that?
I'll be manning the stand, many stands. I'll be down at the RAL stand, the Women in Aviation stand, and the Royal Aeronautical stand, and really just networking with as many young people who come through the door and trying to engage them and show them what a wonderful industry it is. Obviously, down at RAL's, we've got some fantastic activities. We've got a really cool community down there of aircraft that have flown in and aviators who have parked their aircraft that you can go, you have a chat to them, learn about the aircraft. A lot of them maintain them themselves, so that's a really cool thing that I think people often forget. You can maintain your own aircraft. So there's lots happening, and I'll be running around, but as tired as I'll be, I'm on cloud nine when I'm here. So if you're out there and you see me bright red hair and a RAL shirt, pull me over and say hello. I'd love to meet you all.
Fantastic. Well, you're such a big advocate for this industry, and I really, really appreciate what you do for all of us. So on behalf of the industry, thank you so much for that. It's great to see somebody taking the baton, so to speak, and really, really running with it. If there's some people listening that are kind of on the outskirts of aviation and they're not sure that they want to dive in and have a go, what would be your parting comment? What would you say to them?
I'd say it's just so diverse. I don't think there's another industry, globally that actually covers so many different facets of one industry. So my career is a perfect example of how you can go in with one idea of wanting to be a pilot, and the doors are open to so many experiences, so many opportunities. So I just couldn't kind of fly the flag high enough to say that you can come into aviation and you can have that career change, but you're in a community of like-minded individuals who will help and support you through whatever change you make. So you're never stuck in a rut, you're never kind of stagnating. The technology is always changing, it's quite innovative. There's different areas of the industry you can get involved with, lots of advocacy. It's just too good not to be involved.
Fantastic. Beautifully said, and well done, and congratulations. If people want to connect with you, Leah, how can they do that? What's the best way?
First of all, please make sure to like our Facebook pages. So whether it be Recreational Aviation Australia or Women in Aviation Australia, I'm big on LinkedIn. That's kind of my personal mode of engagement. But I'll be running around. I'm sure if you ask any of the tents, they can point you in my direction.
Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure that the links to your socials are included in the show notes for this podcast. So thanks again for coming on. You've been a welcome contributor to the Australian Aviation Podcast, and we really appreciate that. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
All right. Bye for now.
Bye.